Chapter 10, I was a lousy stockbroker. To sum it up, I was a lousy stockbroker, and the reasons were plain and simple. I was still drinking, I was lazy, I didn't like the work, and I cut corners. Voila. Excuse me. I liked the image of being a stockbroker, the suit, the nice office, the business card that read Dean Ritter Reynolds with my name on it, and the fact that I could impress chicks that I was attempting to pick up in bars on Division Street with the fact that I worked for an elite company in a posh office. In other words, I liked playing the part of a successful stockbroker, but I just didn't like that actual day-to-day work that it would take to become a successful stockbroker. Go figure. When a new broker starts out, he gets paid a salary for a certain period of time, a so-called grace period, if you will, during which time he or she is supposed to make cold calls and attempt to bring in new customers and build up his so-called customer book. If a new broker isn't doing that, his numbers will basically remain at zero, and when that grace period is over, he'd most likely be let go. As I said, I was lazy, and cold calls were very hard work and no fun at all as far as I was concerned. You might even say they were a form of torture. It was a very, very unpleasant task for a guy like me. Allow me to describe what making a cold call is all about. There were a few large books in the office, for example, The Manufacturer's Guide of Chicago, or something to that effect. And we'd have to open the book, call one of the companies listed in it, ask for so-and-so, and try to sell him some stocks or bonds or some such investment. First of all, most people who are at work generally don't like receiving sales calls from strangers. I mean, for instance, I'd make a cold call to a guy at his workplace, and I'd ask for Mr. So-and-so, and he'd get on and say something like, "Hi, this is John. What can I do for you?" "Hi, John. My name is Brad Kerner, and I'm a stockbroker with Dean Ritter." And more often than not, he'd be furious, and he'd interrupt me right in the middle of my sentence and say, "How the hell did you get my number? Don't you ever call me here again." You know, and then he'd hang up. Making cold calls all day, every day is an ugly job, to put it mildly. I'd say that during the entire time that I worked at Dean Ritter, I turned very few, if any, cold calls into an order, albeit I didn't make many in the first place. They were simply too painful for a guy like me. I did do some business with family and with a few connections that I made here and there, but my father, for instance, had a broker already, and he was satisfied with him. Plus, I'm not sure he trusted me all that much to handle his investments. I mean, you could say that my track record with him wasn't so hot. The only new business that I ever did was when I was what is referred to in the business as broker of the day. Let me define for you broker of the day. Each broker at Dean Ritter, or any other brokerage firm for that matter, gets the opportunity once or twice a month to be what's known as the broker of the day, which means that all of the calls that come into Dean Ritter's office that day, where the person calling doesn't already have a broker, are directed to the broker of the day. I love being broker of the day because I actually got to do some selling for a change. So I did get some new customers when I worked as broker of the day. The other thing that bears mentioning is this. In the stockbroker business, you really had to do things by the book. If you didn't, you'd end up getting your proverbial old tit caught in a ringer. But of course, being the lazy, hungover guy that I usually was, I cut corners and did things that were not kosher, so to speak, to get my sales numbers up. And cutting corners and not doing things by the book would eventually get me in real trouble more than once. I didn't have many customers, so I used to make the most out of the few that I had. In one case which I described here, which I will describe to you, I'm ashamed of myself to this day, and I mean that. It's a part of my past that I regret, but there's nothing that I can do about it, so I have to live with it. When you screw somebody in life, especially if it's a kind little old lady, you have to live with that. They get hurt, but so do you, because you have to live with those bad deeds on your conscience for the rest of your life. Do you know that I still feel guilty about what I did to this person some 40 years later? It's not a pretty story, and I hate having to recall it here, but it's pertinent, and it will give you an idea of the kind of stockbroker, and for that matter, the kind of man that I was. I had worked as a stockbroker of the day. I worked broker of the day one day, and an 80-year-old woman called into Dean Ritter's office for the first time and says I was broker of the day. The call came to me, which ended up being bad luck for her. I actually still remember her name, but I won't reveal it here. She had money and was a very with-it old lady. Her son was a physician, but really didn't have the time to take care of his mother's investments, so he let her do it. That first call, I had sold her some Commonwealth Edison stock, which was a very conservative and appropriate investment in her case, as it paid a big dividend and was not considered a risky investment whatsoever. We ended up doing some subsequent transactions, and she started to trust me as I had put her in conservative and appropriate investments. Let me interject here a bit. There are a few rules that brokers are supposed to follow, and one of those is Rule 405, otherwise known as the Know Your Customer Rule. It essentially states that you have to get to know your customer so that you know what type of investment is appropriate for that particular customer. By the way, an 80-year-old woman should only be buying conservative and non-risky investments such as government bonds, which are guaranteed and at that time paid a fairly high interest rate. There's little to no risk with such an investment, and appropriate in this type of situation. I've gotten the following info from the website lawinfo.com that explains Rule 405 better than I can. Due diligence rule. Stockbrokers who are recommending that a client buy or sell a security that is traded on the New York Stock Exchange must comply with NYSE Rule 405. Rule 405 requires stockbrokers to use due diligence to learn the essential facts relative to every customer, every order. Rule 405 does not explain what is essential, however. Other guidance from the New York Stock Exchange suggests that information such as age, financial status, and investment objectives are essential pieces of information. Some stockbrokers are paid a commission for every product that they sell. The commissions vary from product to product and can create a conflict of interest between the stockbroker's own interests and those of the client. Therefore, it is important to make sure that your investment advisor or stockbroker understands your financial status and investment objectives and tries to further your objectives every single time a transaction is made on your behalf. Otherwise, you may be making unwise investments and your stockbroker may be violating important ethical rules. Okay, I'm speaking again. In other words, you don't take big risks such as options trading in the economy elderly lady who really just wants a decent return on her money with little to no risk. I want to point out to you that my actions were not premeditated or on purpose. I just did what came natural at the time and had no intention of screwing anyone, which is exactly what ended up happening. After those first few investments with this kind elderly woman, I thought it would be a good idea to open a discretionary account for her. A discretionary account is a type of account where the broker doesn't need the client's permission to make a trade or buy a security, if you will. It would allow me to trade in her account without asking her permission, so if some good investment came along out of the blue, I could buy it without having to call her and get her permission. So I mentioned it to her that it might be to her advantage if she came in and signed a discretionary account form so that I could just buy and sell in her account as I saw fit. Well, since she trusted me at this point, she agreed and came down to the office and signed the form. Again, I want to point out here that writing this story is a difficult task because I don't want to have to remember it, and I sure don't want to have to report it what a snake I was, but it's pertinent. So anyway, soon after she signed the agreement, I started buying and selling stock options in her account. Well, options trading is extremely risky and a totally inappropriate investment for this little old lady. Options move very quickly, and one has to be really on top of it, an expert, if you will. And that I certainly wasn't, and in fact, I was a beginner. After a while, I was constantly buying and selling options in her account on a daily or even hourly basis, and in the process, losing quite a bit of her capital. And by the way, every time I did a trade, I got a commission, and I did a lot of trades, so the bottom line is that I was making a lot of money while she was losing a lot of money. This type of trading that I was doing in her account is called churning. Churning is when a broker trades often in a client's account just for the purpose of making commissions. I got the following regarding churning from Investopedia. Churning is a term applied to the practice of a broker conducting excessive trading in a client's account mainly to generate commissions. Churning is an unethical and illegal practice that violates SEC Rules 15C17 and security laws. Okay, so I was doing both inappropriate trades and also churning in her account, two no-nos. I have never had to pay a price for this because I was fired before it had come to light. But I'm sure it eventually did, and that nice old lady who gave me her trust, I screwed. And I've had to live with that all these years and still do. I'm pretty sure Esther is gone by now, but I'm not. And I have to live with what I did to that very kind and trusting old lady. Lastly, in a nutshell, the following was my typical day as a stockbroker. I'd get up, shit, shower, and shave, put on my Navy summer weight wool Brooks Brothers suit, fall in love with myself in the mirror, put on my skates, elevator down and out the building, skate down State Street to the best neighborhoods in all of Chicago, the Gold Coast, then over to stunning Michigan Avenue, then all the way down Michigan Avenue and over to the Chicago River and on into the Loop, and then to Dean's office, which was a brand spanking new dynamite building. All the better for that superficial stockbroker that I happen to be. It made me feel like $1 million every time I glided in. Anyway, I'd arrive at the office on my skates at around 8:30 a.m., and then I'd shoot the breeze with a few of my buddies there, make a few social-type phone calls, act busy, and then around 11:30, I'd go to lunch with my fellow drinking buddy broker, and we'd go to this very nice outdoor cafe, drink our lunch, and then stumble back into the office, where I would proceed to get nothing done all afternoon. And then when the New York Stock Exchange closed at 3 p.m. Chicago time, I'd leave the office, get on my skates, and head back home the same way I came. There was one small, tiny little problem with this scenario, and that was the fact that to get back to my rented condo in the Gold Coast, I had to skate across that infamous street called Division Street. If you happen to be from Chicago, you'd know all about Division Street because of its bars and famous nightlife. It's a street that is all bars, and I did all that I could do to skate right on past that there, Division Street, and go home, but to no avail. I could never get that past that there, Division Street, without stopping for a few. And by the way, I never just drank a few. Alcoholics don't have that ability. We drink until either the bar closes or we get kicked out for being an asshole. Myself, anyway. So I'd skate to Division Street, take off my skates, don my expensive, fashionable wingtip shoes, and hit my favorite watering hole. And by the way, in those days, the 80s, everybody was snorting coke for recreation, even guys in suits like me. And so when I'd go into that bar, I'd hit the men's room straight away and into a stall, take out that little vial of coke that I had on the inside pocket of my suit coat, unscrew the cap that had a tiny little spoon attached, snort a couple of those tiny little spoonfuls of coke, and then make my way back to the bar where I would proceed to order my first of many beers. And then, of course, I'd be on the prowl for a sexy female that I could take back to my room for some of that good old-fashioned sex with a stranger type of thing that I like so much. I was a virtual pickup artist and was indeed very skilled at that endeavor, the picking up of girls, that is. My best friend at Dean Witter was a guy named Dan, and he and I would hit a watering hole on occasion, and I remember what he said to me one time. He said, "Brad, I like going out drinking with you so I can try to get one of those girls that you turned down." He did say that. Not exactly sure what he meant, but most likely that I was a real pro when it came to getting a cute girl back to my room. Hell, I was motivated. I was never motivated in my work at Dean Witter. You could sum up my career like this. I looked the part, I played the part, and in fact loved playing the part, but I didn't do the work. I talked the talk, but I just didn't walk the walk. I was certainly a stockbroker, but only superficially, if you get my drift. End of chapter.